Welcome to another episode of the Choose Strong podcast. I am your host, Sally McCray. Thank you for joining me wherever you are, whether you're in your car or you're on the trail, or maybe you're making a cup of coffee in your kitchen. I want to say thank you for choosing this podcast and supporting us in all the ways that you do. We love our audience, and we know that you are going to love today's conversation. Now, before we dive in and I introduce you to our guests, I want to just share with you a little bit about the sponsors for this show. And that first one being the Sally McCray Strength app, which you can download using the link in the caption of this podcast. You can try out the app. It's free for a week, and you're going to find everything in there from strength exercises. There's running workouts in there, mobility, ways to strengthen your knees, and a lot of other great things. Our second sponsor is the Mammoth Trail Fest, which I would love for everyone to check out. This Mammoth Trail Fest is September 22nd, 23rd, and 24th in my favorite mountain range in the Eastern Sierra. It is one of the most exciting, incredible trail events of the year, and it's right here in California. You will find out more about that in this show, but also make sure you check out the link here in the caption and sign up today, because we know that those events are going to sell out very fast. All right. So without further ado, I am very excited to introduce to you someone who I got to meet almost a decade ago while I was at Who's in El Morro Bay 50K race back in 2014. This super fast dude comes flying in to the finish line on my home trail. So if you're not familiar with the Who's in El Morro 50K, it's in the Laguna Canyons here in Orange County. It's a beautiful race course. And this was my first introduction to our guest today, Tim Tollefson. Thank you so much for being here, Tim.
Oh, it's so good to see you again. I feel like it's been a really long time since we've had a good chat. So I'm looking forward to this.
I agree. It has been way too long. And I feel like that for a lot of us who are in the competitive trail scene, we spend a lot of time in the mountains. We spend a lot of time traveling to races and actually racing. And, you know, I'm sure you can agree with me, when we get moments to interact and connect with people, and a lot of times it's on the other side of the world, whether it's at UTMB or some other crazy race, it is such a treat. So I just want to say thank you so much for joining us today. But also, Tim, do you remember that race back in 2014? Because I think Lindsay was racing the Long Beach Marathon.
Yeah, I definitely remember that. That was my second ultra. And like, true to fashion, I had done my first one 2 weeks before. And then like this dumb idea popped in my head that I should just do another one. And but I'm glad, because we crossed paths and we got to hang out, and it started almost a decade long friendship. That is a beautiful spot. Like I would love to get back down there and at least, you know, just go for a run with some friends or something. It's absolutely gorgeous.
It's so pretty.
Kissing the ocean right there. It's spectacular.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. And I think that, so you won that race, and then didn't Lindsay win the Long Beach Marathon?
She did. She won the Long Beach Marathon, but that was actually a little bit before. She won it back in 2010. And then I think that year she may have been second or third that year.
Okay. Yeah. I should probably pause and let our listeners know, because as the listeners get to know you, Tim, I have to say too that Tim's wife is a full-on badass runner as well and enjoys running roads. I know she loves the marathon distance. In fact, didn't she just break her own record recently? Was it last year?
Last year at CIM, she was 2 seconds off her personal best, but she unfortunately had a very rare rookie mistake and her shoe came untied. And so we had to stop and double knot them mid-race. So she lost a good 10 to 15 seconds. I threw some salt in the wound, like reminding her that she didn't double knot them. And it's like, how long have you been doing this? But it's cool. She's still out there crushing.
Yeah. Yeah. She's pretty incredible, because I know that she juggles a lot of other things too, but it's amazing in road running how much a few seconds matters. Very different from the trail. We don't, that doesn't happen a lot. A few seconds don't matter as much in a 100-mile race.
No, like you'll sit down and you could take a nap. You could have a bowl of pasta and you're just going to get up and keep going. But you're right. And I think coming from the track and the roads, I know personally it was hard to give that up. We're in an ultra. If I was walking, I thought my race was over, when in reality, obviously it's so far from that, but you're so conditioned coming from, you know, the marathon that, yeah, every second counts.
Yeah, 100%. So this is a very light introduction to Tim, but I actually want to go way back, because for our listeners, yes, Tim is a rock star professional trail runner. He is probably best known, you know, running in the mountains here in the Eastern Sierra. He was originally signed with Nike. We were teammates for a while, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Then he moved to Hoka, and now he is with the incredible Crafts Sportswear, who is doing some amazing things in the track and ultra world. But Tim, this is year 9 for you as a professional trail runner. I think that's right.
Yeah, it's wild.
Yeah. I can't believe it either, because I think we're the same. This is year 9 for me as well. For you to be at the top of your game for so long is pretty incredible. I'd love to backpedal a little bit, because I did watch your documentary that was released by Koros last year. And one of the things that made me smile immediately is that you are from Minnesota.
I am. Yep.
You are from Minnesota.
I lived there till I was 10. Yep.
Yeah. My mom was born in Minnesota. There are so many incredible athletes from Minnesota. Like, there's a lot of good people from Minnesota. So,
I mean, honestly, in the endurance world, you could pick any discipline: track, road, trail, Nordic. Mm-hmm. You can find so many examples of women and men that come from the motherland of Minnesota.
Yeah.
I think you just learn to suffer from an early age when it's below 40 and the wind chill is like minus 100. And you're just like, I feel like it sets you up to be a resilient, gritty type of person.
Mm-hmm. And do you still have family out there? Or have they
Not as much. Only I have a couple cousins and an aunt that are left in the Minneapolis area, but everyone else has basically moved to the West Coast.
Okay. So from the age of 10, you lived in Minnesota, and it's you and you have a brother. Is that right?
I have an older brother, a younger brother, and a younger sister.
Oh, there's four of you.
So I'm one of four. I'm second in line.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I was born and raised in a little town called Northfield, just south of Minneapolis. And then we were there till I was 10, and then we moved to California.
Okay. And your move to California was in Northern California. And I think it was it right outside, for people that are that would be most familiar, it was pretty close to the Western States area. Auburn.
Yeah. So it's like right between Auburn and Sacramento. So the state capital at a town called Rocklin.
Rocklin.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Like, one of my best friends lives in Rocklin.
Is it the Trail Runner Nation people?
No. I mean,
because I think they're both in Rocklin also.
Yeah, you're right. They are. My one of my best college friends, her name's Leslie Vandenacker, and it's actually her birthday today. So happy birthday, Leslie. No, she lives up
happy
there.
Happy birthday,
with
Leslie.
Her, yeah, with her four kiddos and husband. So,
okay.
All right. So your journey, we're going all the way back to the beginning, because I think this is like going to be a really powerful part of the discussion. For those listening, you know that our tagline is strong mind, strong body, strong love. And if you have not watched Tim's film yet, that will also be a link here in the show notes. It's very powerful. And I think that the stuff that you share, Tim, is something that all of us can relate to, and maybe not like in the exact same vein, but I would love to chat with you a little bit about your growing up and when you first started running, because you shared in that film that when you moved from Minnesota to California, that you had some bullies that weren't too kind to you and made fun of you, whether it was because of your hair, your clothes, or can you tell us a little bit about that? This is a very relatable part. I think all of us are going to relate to this too.
Yeah, for sure. I think that, you know, yeah, I think that is part of sort of the childhood experience, you know, coming from the Midwest straight into the suburban environment. It was a major culture shock. You know, we went from being on a farm with, you know, 100 acres of land to being at the end of a cul-de-sac with sidewalks and fences. And then just culturally, it was a lot different. And I found quickly that, like, for whatever reason, yeah, kids started to kind of like single me out and made fun of me for a lot of just external things, you know, my voice, my hair, my glasses, you know, just a lot of that, just superficial stuff. And so I think that really kind of started to make me like self-aware of trying to figure out why people don't like me and fixating on some of these external things. And so that was in fifth grade that I was introduced to California. And I mean, honestly, at first, probably the first couple of years, I hated California. It was like, I want to go back to the Midwest. I want Minnesota. You know, I started to find that through athletics, I found more acceptance. I think it was called the Presidential Fitness Awards back
in
the day.
Yeah, I remember those.
I don't know if they still do those. Yeah.
Those were awesome.
I don't even remember who was the president that day. Maybe it was like Bush, but like if you ran a mile in a certain time or did a certain amount of pull-ups or sit-ups, mm-hmm. you'd get this letter from the Oval Office with like a stamp of yes. the president's signature. And that was what first, I think I ran my first mile as a part of that. And it turned out that I had a bit of a knack for it. And I was the fastest in the school. And I think through that, it suddenly like kids realized, hey, like maybe this kid's kind of cool. And so like through athletics, I started to find more of that kind of place of acceptance or perceived acceptance. And that really actually trickled more into soccer. Soccer was my jam. And I know that was your big thing. Mm-hmm. and I had more dreams of being like, you know, a pro soccer player than I ever did of a runner.
Yes.
So,
I'm talking to my
I
people right
soccer.
Now. Like, yes.
I mean, even
so
now
cool.
I wonder why I didn't pursue soccer more, because I still think that's more the glory sport. Like they don't have to suffer through 24 hours of activity.
So true.
They
make a little bit more money too as pro athletes, just a tiny bit.
I think just a little bit.
Their and contracts they don't have to sell are slightly their soul. Better.
Seriously, what position were you?
So I was outside mid and striker. Okay. I love to score.
Yep.
But they would call the outside mid, they called us greyhounds because we could run forever. Right?
Like so we were the exact same. Like, I mean, I was definitely in the mid, but then I discovered striker and I was like, no, I like this. Like, this is the glory
totally
spot.
Like,
you just get to like cherry pick and sit and kick basically.
Yep.
Like, I had a hard time going back to midfield after that.
Yes, that's exactly how I was. Like I was striker all throughout high school. And then when I got to college, you're like, oh, dude, you can like run. And I'm like, no, I just wanted to score. And so how long did you play soccer?
I played through my senior year of high school.
Okay.
And I kind of did the, at least at that time in California, like I played for the school, I played for club, mm-hmm. and then there was also like ODP. And so like, yeah. I mean, and then we had indoor. And so it was pretty much year round playing soccer.
Yeah.
I think it was, let's see, my freshman year when I got to high school, because I did run cross country and track in middle school and I had some success there. And so the high school coaches had heard of me, but when I got to high school, I was all about soccer and they tried to like convince me to come out for the team and I said no. And then sophomore year, I decided that I'd go out for track to stay in shape for fall ball for us. And so that was my first reintroduction to like official running was sophomore year of high school, but I didn't do cross country again until my senior year. And that was when I decided to give up running or give up soccer and pursue running a bit more. So that was my first full year of running was senior year.
Okay. Wow. So did you find, well, was this because of the opportunity for college scholarships? Did you feel like I'm going to have more opportunity in running than I am in soccer?
You know, yes, but I had delusions of grandeur. I thought I was a lot better at running than I was, but there were some like upperclassmen that had gone on to run in college. And so I thought, oh, I would like to do that. But the reality was I wasn't fast enough to be recruited. And I was fortunate though, a couple of those previous teammates they went to Chico State, and they basically convinced our coach at, or the coach at Chico, Gary Town, to take a chance on me and let me walk on to the program, because my marks were not good enough to actually like make the squad. But the old teammates vouched for me, and they said, hey, like, he's never really had a full season. He has a lot of upside. You just need to like give him a chance. Wow. Without their like advocating for me, I definitely wouldn't have been able to. But so Gary, he was like, yeah, like, I can, it was kind of a win-win, because like, if I came on like as a walk-on and I burn out, it's kind of like, whatever. But it was really like, I'm very grateful that he allowed it. And so that started my 5-year collegiate career, which was, that was a challenge, because, you know, you get thrown into the fire of going from like a very moderate high school career and relatively undertrained to like the collegiate ranks, where you have amazing athletes, you know, really dedicating themselves to their sport. And so it took me a couple of years to really find that balance where I started to kind of find, you know, a bit more success.
Mm-hmm. So that's pretty incredible. So because of your friends, you were able to find this pathway into running and into college running, and you spent 5 years doing it. Was the first year a redshirt year for you? Were you just using that year to build up, or what was that?
Yeah, first year was a red shirt, which I'm glad that exists, because I was not ready to compete. And it just allowed, I think, as you enter college, even if you're not an athlete, there's just a huge learning curve.
So true.
With just like your social life, living on your own for the first time, depending on where you're at school, managing all that stuff, you know, being treated like an adult. So I think that all of that immediately on your shoulders is a lot to handle. And then if you add high level competitive sport on top of it, it's really a challenge. So not having the extra pressure of competing for the university was great. I also wasn't ready. I couldn't have made the team. So, I think it's a great transitional period, you know, just for any athlete or student athlete, you know, to have that personal growth. I think it's necessary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. College is crazy. I mean, I feel like so many kids have all this pressure. They graduate from high school. They're 18 years old. They get into college, and everyone's like, what do you want to do with your life? It's like, I mean, you graduate from college, you still don't know what you want to do with your life.
Dude, I'm 37 and I still don't really know what I want to do with my life. But like, you're right. Like, it's crazy. Like, I think back to, so I graduated 2003 from high school. At that point, like, honors classes and AP classes existed, and they were like starting to like really encourage kids to do it, but it wasn't mm-hmm. necessary. And I won't even claim to speak to know what's going on in high school these days, but I've heard like kids have over 4.0s or 5.0s, and I'm just like,
over 5. It's insane.
Okay.
Insane.
So, I mean, I feel like I lucked out where I didn't take a single AP or honors course, and I just like barely got into university. But it's like, to your point though, it's like all that pressure and expectation of like figuring out or claiming to know what you want to do and declaring majors. And I think it's just important that everyone realizes it's normal to not know. So if all of your peers feel like they have their path set, it's okay that you don't. And it's very likely your peers aren't going to stay on that same path. Mm-hmm. But it's just that, like, you know, that comparison is the thief of joy. And I think it's easy to fall into feeling like you don't have it figured out and everyone else does. When in reality,
so
I don't know if anyone truly has it figured out. Like, it's, I like the a la carte mode, like sample what you're interested in, you know, and keep options, because it's too early to really make that like 100% decision into anything. Mm. I don't know, which
it's so true.
I know you have to if you declare a major, but it's, yeah, I mean, that's the other, like, I actually, my parents, you know, encouraged me to go to college, and I applied to a bunch of schools, and I got denied by every college except for Chico. So it's almost like the stars aligned, where like, I got denied by Davis, I got denied by Cal Poly SLO, I got denied by, like, you list it. I only applied to California schools, but I basically got turned down from, like, opening rejection letter after rejection letter. Like, that was fun. But thankfully, like, CSU Chico, they got my back.
Dude, that's amazing. And I, you know, I think that they should implement a transition year for kids going from high school to college, where it's just about learning about moving out and becoming an adult and managing your own schedule and stress and all the things, and especially as athletes, I think that's really key that you had that redshirt year. I think that's awesome. I would love for my kids to do that.
For sure. Yeah, I just have a redshirt university year. It doesn't matter if you do sports. Like, it's just like everyone gets the redshirt year.
Okay. Yeah. Doesn't matter if you do sports, because how many kids like that move away to university end up coming back home after the first year because it's just too much. I mean, that's super common. But I want to dive in though, because I know that you spent so much time playing soccer. And I love the story that you shared in your documentary. You talk a lot about wanting to become a professional soccer player. That was probably more on your sights first. And then you transitioned to this running. You saw opportunity there. When you were a soccer player, did you feel like you had some of the same struggles that you did in running, or did that start as a result of running?
I really didn't. I felt like, and I'm some of this is like, I've had to tell myself through therapy, like feelings aren't fact, where oftentimes my feelings like maybe paint a picture that aren't actually like based in reality. But I felt much more like a soccer player. I was always told I was a strong, you know, athlete growing up. And like I had more of that probably like middle distance or, you know, soccer body type, where I was muscular, I was strong, I was powerful. And so I felt like I fit the soccer mold, but like my heart really was, it ended up in running. And as I got more into running, I realized that like compared to my, you know, my peers, they had what I would have labeled the more stereotypical long distance kind of body type. Almost from the beginning, I felt like I didn't quite fit in, you know, just aesthetically. And, you know, some of this piggybacks off of, you know, being overly self-aware from like early age of being bullied a lot. I think I was always hypercognizant of just my appearance and what other people may think or say about myself. And so as I got into running, you know, there was this like immediate clash where I didn't feel like a runner because I didn't look like my teammates. And then, you know, people's comments, which, you know, I definitely acknowledge that they didn't have any like malintent, and they were, you know, often actually compliments. Like I would internalize them, and it was more, you know, reason why I didn't fit in. And I'd be like, you're so strong. Like, look how big your quads are, you know, like you're so muscular and like all these positive things. But at this point in my life, I took those as, you know, almost attacks and threats to my position in this, you know, community or in this tribe of runners, because I basically interpreted those comments as, look how big your legs are. And this kind of started to lay some seeds of, you know, what I ended up dealing with and continue to deal with is the body dysmorphia or body dysmorphic disorder, where, you know, it's like your view of your body is so out of alignment with the reality that like you spend an inappropriate amount of time trying to fix or change those things, when in reality they don't need to be changed. But so that was probably, you know, the beginning of some of these things in high school, where, you know, surrounded by, you know, people that, and also there was at that time in the late 90s, early aughts, there was, you know, some cult classic books and movies that had come out about running that, like, you know, they, I still love them, but I cherry picked single lines or words that were spoken or written and used those as kind of reasons why I needed to change my body to become this athlete. And so, you know, I kind of went down this deep rabbit hole for, you know, the next several decades of basically playing the comparison game and trying to, you know, change myself to fit into a sport, when in reality, like, you know, something I've learned is that, like, you know, my body never needed to shrink. It was more my self-love needed to grow, and I needed to find a way to just be comfortable with who I was, you know, because really it's kind of like, you know, trying to change who you are is just a waste of something really special.
Wow. That was really powerful, what you just said, all of that. And I want to thank you for being so vulnerable to share it. I think it takes a lot of courage to open up ourselves and let, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, you know, hear your story through the film. But, you know, the courage that you have to do that has also helped so many people. I can only imagine the amount of messages and feedback that you have gotten as a result? Has that been something that has encouraged you?
It has. I mean, to be completely honest, it was the hardest thing I've ever done to actually open up about that. It's because I think with anything that's like any of us, all of us have struggles. You know, we all have something that we battle. And what I have found is when you try to battle something alone, often you like in that isolation, whatever your demon or, you know, monster that scares you is, like it feeds and thrives in the darkness. So the more we stay isolated or keep things to ourselves or, you know, are not able to open up, the more those things can just kind of fester and ruminate inside of our own heads. And I think it's not until we learn to kind of like give voice or smile at the monsters that it strips them of their power. Because, you know, and I mean, in my case, like mental illness really thrives in isolation. And so it's not until like you shed light on it that it like, you know, robs it of its power. And so I think, you know, going through that video project, it was absolutely terrifying. There were numerous occasions where I like wanted to back out and not do it, but it also forced me to face some of these things that I've just internalized for 20 years. And what I think probably the most healing thing selfishly for me was that it did, as you said, allowed other people to like basically reach out and share or talk with me. And it highlighted that I'm not alone. And I think that's something in life, like there are so many instances in different domains that we feel like we're the only person that has ever thought this, gone so through true. This, experienced this. And in reality, and Lindsay says this, you know, if you knew Lindsay, and as you do, it's she says it with love, but she's like, you're not special. Like, you know, it's like everyone has something. And it's kind of like, but you need to hear that sometimes, because in our head, we can feel like you're the only person that's ever thought this, experienced this, dealt with this, walked this. And when you realize you're not the only person, I feel like that is very empowering to know that you're not alone. And like, it kind of gives you hope that, hey, someone else has experienced this. And there's that sense of like connection, when I think that's what a lot of us are striving for, is a sense of belonging or a sense of, you know, connection with something. And so opening up, it helped remind me that there are many people, you know, thousands of people that deal with similar or the exact same thing. And realizing that I wasn't alone was a very powerful thing. And again, it's kind of that starting to strip the power that these voices have inside of your head, and so that you can actually face reality. But it was not an easy or fun thing to do, and it still isn't. Like, it's not my favorite thing to talk about, but I recognize how important it is, because like many people, we're conditioned to be strong and hold up a good front that everything is okay. And, you know, it's like I can, you know, show up on Sunday with a smile and, you know, life is good. But in reality, it's normal to have struggle. And I think normalizing that is an important thing for all of us.
Absolutely. Wow. That is super powerful words, Tim. I know that people listening are going to be so encouraged by what you just said. I know they're going to be encouraged also by the film when they watch it. You know, I feel especially after watching that film, I thought, man, Tim and I have some similarities, and even right down to the soccer and this idea that we still look like soccer players. You know, I think that not a lot of people consider men struggling with body dysmorphia as much as women. And I'm so grateful that you have put that out there, because I know growing up, it was almost like, of course girls are insecure about how they look. And it's like everything, not even like as athletes. It's like, she wishes her boobs were big and her butt's too big and her hips. I mean, it's like constant. Like from the time I was a little girl, it was like, girls are always on diets. Girls are always trying to find jeans that look better. Like everything that I knew growing up, and even watching my mom, I was like, my mom was like always on a diet, always trying a new fitness fad. It just felt like that was literally part of being a girl. Like we all found something we didn't like about ourselves. But I also knew and had a lot of guy friends that always would talk about one thing they didn't like about themselves. Their calves were too small. They wish they had a six pack. They didn't like their hair. Like they, and I found it very interesting entering the sports world, especially as a trail runner. Being a trail runner was the first time that I actually got so much attention for not looking like a runner in a very negative way. And, you know, I had some years where I struggled with that too, until I just finally chose to be like, nope, like I'm gonna embrace this. But I had years where I was like, how do I change this? How do I completely like get rid of all this muscle? And I even had like a really well-known coach, and he's awesome, but he just said, yeah, don't lift weights for a year. Like, don't do anything, like all like slow walking. Like, this is what you need to do. And I realized the more that I picked myself apart, that I was just becoming just as unhappy as the girls that I knew growing up that didn't like, you know, the way that they looked. And I think at the end of the day, and you said it so well, all of us, and you know, we're humans are imperfect. We all struggle with something, and sometimes it's at certain seasons in our life. Like, some of our struggles are lifelong, and some things are for seasons. And when we talk about those things, when we share them bravely, you're helping so many people behind you. You know, you're shining a light for those to say, you know what, step here, you're going to be okay. And so, I don't know if you, how often you've kind of rubbed elbows with guys that have struggled with it, or if any of, you know, if you find that it is more girls than guys, but I guarantee you guys that are listening to this can be like, yep, I just keep it quiet. We don't talk about our bodies.
For sure. And I think, I mean, through this process, I have had, you know, hundreds of emails and DMs from men, you know, thanking and sharing their experience, which, you know, and to be honest, it's hard because like, I'm still very much like kind of in the recovery process. So it can be a little much like dealing with all that. And I know it comes from a great place and I appreciate the, you know, the comments, but you know, anyone that may hear this and I didn't reach back out, like I heard what you said and I appreciate it. And I didn't have the strength to, you know, respond. And I hope people understand that. But yeah, it's
people do definitely. I think it's,
yeah. But it is. It's I would say like something like BDD or eating disorders typically, like historically, have affected more women than men. But men definitely are impacted. And one thing I have experienced is that it's very hard to get the treatment you need because, like, as a man, I didn't fit the clinical diagnoses of a lot of the different metrics that are required for insurances to pay for things, or for you to even like kind of like get in, like to be screened properly. And so that was another challenge where, you know, I'm thankful for, you know, my medical team that was able to like continues to support me. And, you know, it's probably, you know, but it's a challenge because also then externally it's easier to write someone off as you don't look the part. So it's almost like you're potentially like kind of cast aside that, yeah, you don't quite fit the bill. So we don't really believe this is an issue for you. Cause look, you know, you're of a normal, you know, weight but it's, yeah. So, I mean, it's a very layered thing, but I think, you know, from what you said, exactly, like, you know, all those insecurities and fears about my body, you know, just concerned about every little aspect of it. It's a very lonely place to be. And anyone that has kind of been there, if it's temporarily, or if you're stuck in that low and it's, you know, a lifelong battle, it is a very lonely, isolating place. And anything that leads into like, you know, shame spirals is such a dangerous place to end up. And that's where, you know, I encourage anyone that, you know, may have struggles or concerns, like, you know, just reach out to someone you trust and at least start a conversation. It doesn't have to be some big grandiose, like, you know, effort or, you know, even going professional, like just open up to a friend or a sister or a parent. I just find that there's so much power in that vulnerability, but it is going to suck. Like, vulnerability does not feel good. I almost feel like if it does, then it's probably not true vulnerability. Like, it's hard to actually be honest with ourselves or others. But I think that when we are able to do that, that's where the most powerful connections in life, you know, really come from. And it's, I mean, I just think about some of the, you know, the lowest points, like in my like journey, I'm glad I had such a supportive network around me and that I am an eternal optimist. I've always, you know, kind of had this thought that things will improve. And I think that serves us well as ultra runners, where you get into some like some deep, heavy stuff in the middle of a race and it's like, this is never going to get better. And then like you stick it out and it does. I think that's applicable to life, where, you know, there were some very scary, dark moments, but I'm just glad that, you know, I kept taking that next step, you know. But I'm also learning like recovery is a process. And I think this applies to anything. It, you know, it could be substance abuse. It could be any mental illness or recovery from fill in the blank. You know, it is a process. It's a practice that you have to continually work at, just like in sport. You know, we are what we do. And I think that recovery has to be a habit. And it's something that I choose actively every day to work on. And I don't do it perfectly. And that's another thing, like you said, is like, you know, letting go of perfection, progress, not perfection, trying to just take those steps forward where, you know, let those days stack up and weeks stack up. And eventually it's like, I know it's going to build into something I'm proud of, but it's, I still find myself all the time messing up, wanting to start over. I just want tomorrow to come, you know, and I have to remind myself, you know, in some of these recovery apps I do, they're fun little, I guess, nuggets of wisdom. And one was, what was it? It was something about like, if, I don't know, it was like, if you mess up, don't give up on the day just because you made a mistake once. You know, it's like dropping your phone and then smashing it. It's kind of like, you don't need to ruin everything just because you made one mistake. You know, it's kind of like, hey, you can choose to change direction at any moment in a day, where for years, I always thought, no, it has to be tomorrow. It's like, I messed up today. I'm going to double down on messing up for the rest of the day. And then tomorrow I'll start fresh. And it's like, you know, your rock bottom is wherever you decide to stop digging. And that could be like right here, right now. And I think that's a very powerful kind of concept to always remind myself that it's like, yeah, you can change direction in life at any moment. Like, you don't have to wait for something. Like, you can just take a stand and move in the direction you know you'll be proud of.
So powerful. Man, you have so many like nuggets of wisdom. I'm so encouraged just listening to you, Tim.
Therapy. I don't mean to interrupt you, but like, so I didn't start going to therapy till I was 35. And I know it's not a good practice to like get into like what ifs, but I really do. I just know it'd be so powerful if like we had better resources for teenagers or kids in college, you know, just access to like start learning these things. Cause I mean, even now I'm 37 and I feel like my emotional toolkit is starting to be bolstered. But like before I started therapy 2 years ago, I had the emotional toolkit of like, I don't know, a teenager, you know, and I feel like that it was just stunted because I was stuck in this cycle. And like, I knew I could be angry or mad or sad or happy, but I didn't know there was like emotional wheels with hundreds of words and like different feelings written out. And it's just like, I don't know, I find that amazing. And I wish there was more access to mental health for people of any age, because it's such an important thing. And as you were saying earlier, like, you're thrown off into college and you're supposed to know what major, what your career path is going to be, and like all these expectations socially, to find a partner or, you know, line up all your internships and it's just a lot to handle. And I think that it's unrealistic, but, you know, having more tools in our kit to deal with the hardships, I think, is important, because life is always going to be a challenge. Like, I mean, we don't want it to be easy, but you just want to be equipped to go out there and tackle it and know that, hey, I have the tools to be able to be successful, even though it's going to be a challenge along the way.
Mm-hmm. You're so right. The access to therapy, the access to people that, you know, both professionals and just having someone to listen to you. I'll tell you what, Tim, I know you've gotten messages from people that you're like, wow, this is really heavy. Like, this person's essentially a stranger just pouring their heart out to me. And like, I don't know how to respond. But what I've learned is eye-opening over the years. And I had some time to spend with Dean Karnazes in London. He was there speaking as well. And he talking on the same topic, he said, you know, sometimes like people share stuff with me, I don't know what to do with it. Like, it's just so heavy. And I'm so grateful for that they shared it with me. And so we had this conversation. I said, there's a lot of lonely people out there who have no one. Like, if you think about it, if someone is coming to you, you're basically a stranger to them. They know you from like following you on Instagram, and they are now telling you things that they're deeply struggling with, and this hurt and this pain. And what does that tell you? You know, and it's not just one person, it's a lot of people over and over. And so I think that speaking up in this way, that there is help out there. There are people that care. And sometimes it is people in your circle that maybe it's just too hard to tell someone that knows you. Maybe because you don't want to let somebody down.
Yeah, I have found that
right?
opening up to a stranger is much easier than to someone I actually care about. And that's, I mean, maybe that sounds strange, but it's safer. It is much safer. Like, you know, talking to like my immediate family is much harder than opening up on a podcast. Because even though you know people will listen, it's kind of like, well, I'm not going to attach a face to that. And it feels less personal.
Totally.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's so true. And I think too, for the youth, I'm seeing, gosh, I was in a clothing store with my daughter the other day, and it was a bunch of teenagers that worked there. It was Brandy Melville clothing store. And the girls are, these two employees are folding clothes, and they are both talking to each other about their therapist. She's like, yeah, so when John dumped me, I was telling my therapist how to, oh my gosh, well, my therapist says. And I thought, that is a different,
no.
I did not grow up like that. Growing up, if anyone found out you were in therapy or if you went to therapy, it was like because there was something terribly wrong with you you didn't want people to know.
I mean, I had my first, I actually had a therapy appointment as a kid in Minnesota, and I was absolutely terrified of my brothers and sister finding out. Like, I begged my parents not to let anyone know, because I did. I was like, there's something wrong with me. And I felt broken and ashamed.
Yep.
And so, I think destigmatizing that is an amazing thing, because if people can openly talk about it, and really, you're just talking, but it's breaking that cycle of, because you and I come from the generation of, like, you don't cry, you have to be tough, you put on a smile no matter what. And those are things that we learn, where it's like, I mean, I learned how to play, like live a double life and really know how to operate and make sure no one ever questioned if I was okay, because I didn't want anyone to know. And it's sad, because it's like, these emotions are normal and you should be able to feel the feels and, like, you know, just let it out if you want and cry. But it's, and I think, like you're highlighting, it is changing, which is really cool to see. And I just encourage anyone, you know, that might be on the fence, is like, you don't be afraid. Like, therapy is cool.
it totally is. I mean, and I think too, what the offerings now that they have, I mean, there is online stuff. I have quite a few of my girlfriends. They're kids. They meet with a counselor online. They just go in their room, they shut their door, they put on their earbuds, and you know, and they have a Zoom with a counselor. And it's someone that's just outside of their friend circle, someone outside of their family that's gonna listen, you know? And I think that kids growing up knowing that they have access to that, then also understand, like, it's okay to have rough seasons. It's okay to struggle. It's part of being a human. And I think that the more that we share and talk about that, you know, that's what's going to help people grow. You know, we can't grow and we can't lean into like the strongest version of ourselves if we're not able to take a look at the root of the things that hurt us or deter us from living out a life that is meant for us. I mean, so often, and you know this being in the ultra community, Tim, because there's a lot of people who hear about what you do. And for those that don't know about Tim, I mean, this is one of the highest ranking trail runners in the world. So he has gotten third at UTMB, which is, in my opinion, the most competitive 100-mile race in the world, because so many athletes do it. So many top tier athletes do it. And Tim has stood on that podium twice, and also CCC. So three times at the biggest stage in our sport. Tim knows the sport well. He understands the pressures of competing. He knows how to train his body to be the best. He's been around the community as it's changed. I mean, what it was in 2014 is not what it is today. It's evolved in so many wonderful ways. But I think that when people hear about what you do, Tim, whether you're sitting in a coffee house or, you know, you're at the airport flying to a race, and people are like, wow, you run 100-mile races? That's crazy. Like, that is something I could never do. I can't even drive my car that far. But I think that so often in these conversations with people, you know, we don't ever envision doing things half the time because we don't believe in ourselves. That might even be like the number one reason. We just don't believe that we are capable. Sometimes we don't believe that we deserve to create a body or a life that allows us to do the things that we love. And so much of that is rooted in things that that started back when we were kids. It started back because somebody said something to us that maybe hurt, or we went through an experience that caused a lot of fear or heartache, and we don't know how to get over that. And that's why I was really curious too, just like for your journey from soccer to running and dealing with bullies, like where were those seeds planted? And I think that when we can get to a space where we're able to take a look at all of who we are and the roots of what either causes pain or fear, it helps us grow, helps us kind of dig up the bad seeds and plant better ones. Which kind of leads me to, you know, this next part of you creating something, you growing something, and that's this Mammoth Trail Fest. And I'd love for you just to share a little bit about that, both the backside of it and also as it just relates to where you are in your life right now.
Thank you. And yeah, I think you're spot on. It's learning to just like, yeah, lean into those imperfections that we have. And I think probably the hardest thing is really developing self-love and being proud of who we are and not wanting to change, you know, who we are. And I think that, you know, is probably one of the most important things we can work on. Like, cause really, I don't know, to wish you were someone else is to waste who you are. Mm. I still have to check myself cause I still want to be something different. But it's kind of like,
Can you say that one more time? I love that quote. I like that.
To wish you were someone else is to waste who you are. And
I love it.
But I think that, and I know, like, if you study psychology, like, there are reasons for these things, you know, that we're always comparing ourselves, but it's checking that and realizing that, hey, let's lean into who we are, what makes us special. Yeah, I do. I think that's harder than any ultra I've ever done. And it's something that it's going to continue to take practice. But yeah, where I am now, I've been, I guess, yeah, like over the last decade, 9 years, as you said, of ultra running, I've had some really cool experiences, traveled the world, been in a lot of countries, racing in incredible landscapes, had a lot of opportunity, and I've been fortunate. And like through all those travels and battling all this stuff at the same time, it didn't allow me to really enjoy a lot of that because I was at war with my own mind and afraid of who I was and being on show. And the further up the ranks I got, the more pressure really built because I didn't have the tools to handle it. I imploded a lot along the way. But something I decided to do a couple years ago is I wanted to start to cultivate kind of my dream kind of environment for like a community around the sport of ultra running and trail running. And like that gave birth to the idea of Mammoth Trail Fest, which is a multi-day event that we've started here in Mammoth Lakes, California. And it's really designed to welcome people that are interested in the sport of trail running or are fans of trail running, or they are seasoned, you know, veterans of the trail running scene, but just, you know, to create this venue where everyone can converge in the spectacular place of Mammoth and have amazing trail races, like nightly activations from like live podcasts and films, ability to just connect with people, tell stories, have good food. And hopefully, you know, some of the stuff that we've talked about, like just open up conversations where, you know, we can, you know, destigmatize some of these things that maybe we, you know, we're afraid to talk about, but at the same time, realizing like we're all like connected through that kind of shared, I guess, suffering, but also excitement, enthusiasm for this wonderful sport. So Mammoth Trail Fest is kind of our hope to just like connect all those pieces and make it a place where you can come and just have a great time with the community and also run on some, you know, fantastic trails while doing it. So we had our first one.
Beautiful trails. They're the best trails.
They're pretty spectacular. I know I often think that I am biased, which I am, but it's like, okay, like Sally approves it, so they must be okay. And I mean, we're smack in the middle of California, which is super cool. And so, yeah, we had our first one in September of 2022, and it was it was so much fun. I've never worked as hard as I did those weeks leading into it. And I didn't run with the exception of going out and marking the course at 3 a.m. a couple nights because I was terrified that runners were going to get lost. But it was a blast. And so we're doing it again this year, and we're looking to, continue to build each year and welcome more people. And our hope is that it can just be kind of this, inviting, welcoming space that anyone that might have that interest can come and check it out. And I think there's something that you had mentioned to me that I loved, that's like, if you're nervous or fearful of maybe failing, what better place than in a supportive community where these people around you can pick you up and dust you off and okay, maybe you don't make it to the finish and you actually do drop out, but you're going to be surrounded by people that don't care and they're just going to make you feel welcomed regardless. And I think that's something that all of our volunteers and people involved, they felt that in year one. And in our post-event survey, one of the most common words that popped up was community, which was really cool to see that people just felt hey, we were there having a good time. It was hard. I got pushed to my limit. I listened to some cool people talk, had good food. And also you were challenged. And, through struggle comes growth, as you said earlier. And so I think it's a great way to kind of, work towards that self-actualization of, hey, what can I do with my life? And I feel like trail running is such a great vehicle to explore those outer limits.
Man, I love it so much. And as I said earlier, I'm going to do my best to get there this year. And maybe we can do something together, Tim.
I love this. I like it.
I am most drawn to, and really it is the one thing that kept me in the sport after I did my first ultra, which is American River 50, which I know that you've run before.
I love that race.
It's a classic. But I was so drawn to the community. The community that isn't afraid to write you back. I was a stranger to so many people on Facebook just asking, I've never run an ultra. Can you give me advice? And then I met all these strangers at American River 50 at Packet Pickup, and they were so helpful. And even while I ran my first trail race, I remember I knew nothing about nutrition or utilizing aid stations. I really thought I could go on one bottle of Cytomax. Remember Cytomax?
Yeah.
Ryan Hall used to promote it. And I was like, if Ryan Hall uses this, I'm using it.
It's good for me.
Yes. But I didn't really put two and two together that it's you need lots of bottles of that. And so I was cramping up by mile 30, and I remember John Blue on the trail running back as I'm yelling out, my legs are completely seizing up. I'd never experienced that in my whole life, never experienced it as a soccer player. And he's like, what salt have you had? What have you eaten? And I was 100 yards out from the aid station, and he's like, get back to the aid station, get this and this and this. But finishing that race, experiencing all the ups and downs, and then everyone at the finish line as well. I mean, that's why I wanted to go back. And like you said, everyone wants to belong. People want to be seen. They want to be part of something. They want to know that they can just show up as who they are and that they don't have to impress or perform to be accepted. And I think that that's what trail running is. The ultra community is that. You line up on the line with people that are 70, 80 years old to run a 100-mile race. It's so amazing. People that are brave and just love the trails just as much as the 18-year-olds and 19-year-olds on the line with you. Yeah. And we all set out on the same course. And the conversations that happen, the friendships that are built, when you come into these aid stations and you interact with volunteers who freely give up their time for hours on end just to help you get to that finish line. I mean, that is a beautiful parallel to life. That's what we want. We want people cheering us on. We want people to accept us. So I knew last year when you were creating this, and Tim, I've always been one of your biggest fans. I've always loved just your personality, who you are as a person, and what you have done in this community. You truly are such a light, and it breaks my heart not knowing that you had so many years of struggle, but yet who you are as a person has still always shined through. And you have inspired me so much over the years, to work hard and to keep on coming back even when you get knocked down. And I don't think any trail runner has had just, you know, nonstop greatness, never had a setback or an injury or a bad race. I mean, and you have shown us how to work through all of that, and you've always been a friend. So I was just so excited when you were starting this Trail Fest, because I was like, dude, if Tim's starting it, it's going to be like all of Tim. Like, I know he's going to put himself into it, and it's going to be great because Tim puts himself into everything that he does. And I personally had athletes that I coached went to it, and they could not say enough amazing things about it. And I'll tell you what, one of them got really sick. She had like a couple things going on, I think, leading into it. And so she just was not well. But she said so many amazing, she wasn't able to finish the race that she signed up for. But she had the best time. I mean, she talked about all the other things, about meeting so many fun people and all the fun events and the great food and just how kind everyone was and how well put together it was. And anyway, I really wanted to make sure that you heard that, because it's so clear that you wanted to create community. And even though this athlete wasn't able to finish her race, she's coming back this year because of the amazing experience. Cool. And the people that she met. So I'm just so stoked that you have created this.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's the heart of our sport.
I think what you just touched on, it was a big kind of motivator for having things outside of just the running, because we've all been to a race where you pour your heart into it for months, month upon month upon month beforehand. And then if it doesn't go well, understandably, you're going to be disappointed or upset. But if that's all you had for that weekend, it can feel like a failure. But it's kind of like we have to reframe, like we have to redefine success. And then, like, I think we're able to reframe failure. And, you know, the hope was that, okay, like your athlete, if she doesn't make it, can she still have a positive experience throughout and have other things to look forward to through the weekend and leave with something equally as important as, you know, getting that finish line medal? And I think that's, you know, a big thing that, you know, I've always wanted, because I've had a lot of failures in my running career where I DNF or I don't make, you know, even close to the podium. And it can, if that's the only thing you, like all of your eggs are in that basket, there's a very small margin for quote unquote success. So I think that is one of our pillars that we're trying to work on, is like, you know, not to get away from the competition, because I love competition. I think it's important and we need to strive for things and do hard, challenging things, but yes, like have parallel, you know, pursuits at the same time. And I appreciate those kind words. I absolutely loved joining our OG team back in 2014 with you, because you were one of the pioneers of that, and you're still going strong. You're one of the last.
I can't
standing.
Believe it. I am. Like, Pat's not even the manager anymore. It breaks my heart.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But yeah, that, I mean, you were super, like, I mean, it was awesome to be able to look up to what you, like, I feel like you had opened the door, because you had like a lot of those experiences before we did, as kind of like the younger class that was joining the trail team. And we always very much appreciated all of your guidance and mentorship.
Thank you, Tim. Yeah, that OG team, 14, 15, oh man.
We were going places.
We were. And you know, the best thing about that, it still is my favorite team of all all the brands and years that I've been running. The best thing about the team was we were friends and we were supportive of each other. We had such a good time. And I recall everyone wanted to be on the Nike Trail team in those years. It was like, it was just such a cool, welcoming. And I remember having these conversations that, like, dude, we're not going to act like we're all like high and mighty, exclusive. You can't come talk to us. We're going to be friends with everyone and we're going to support everyone. We cheer each other on. And I think that that's what made it so attractive. You know, this
for
idea
sure.
of like, I want to be a part of a team like that. Like, I want that support. And I don't think that'll ever end. You know, I often talk about how there's, you know, there's competition is great. Like I, you know, you, I'm, we're both competitive athletes. Like we love getting on the podium. It's our job too. Like we have that responsibility to give our best. You know, we're not paid to get 18th place. Like it happens. Like I've had my share of DNFs and way outside of the podium, like horrible, horrible races. But man, the feeling of standing at the top of a podium is what we're going after. Like that is what, that's what we work hard for. And we take that as is our responsibility. At the end of the day, when all is said and done, the greatest part of our career will always be the people that supported us. It's the memories that we make. It's those connections that they reach far beyond our career and our performance. And that's what makes it so full. And I think that you creating this Trail Fest, you are basically giving people a space to both be super competitive, and you have prize money, right? Do you have prize money at
yours? We do.
Or no?
Yeah, and this year even more. Like, last year we had 17,000. This year we're probably going to have over 30,000.
Holy smokes! Thank you for doing that. You're doing it right.
It's something like coming
that
from
could
the
be
other
a whole
side,
another podcast.
We won't go into it, but I just, I feel like it's one of those, like, I feel like if people are giving us money, you know, sponsors and stuff, like, I want to share that with the talent. I want to give that to the people that are working hard for these things and like help support the next generation. And like, it allows us to do really cool things for the event. I'm excited for this year. And we joined the Golden Trail World Series also. So we're going to have some of the best trail runners from around the globe running in Mammoth, which is super fun. And something I really like about trail running is it's similar to, you know, major city marathons where we could have your athlete or a first timer doing their first ever trail race lining up next to Killian on the same start line or, you know, like, or a Courtney. I think it's just really neat that you can share that and then take off and, okay, maybe they beat us by a couple hours, but we're out there on the same trails, same day, going through the same emotions and highs and lows. And that's what's really cool. It ties everyone together. And some of these people make a living off of it and you're out here doing it as a first time or just as a hobby. But there's that shared connection, which I think is really special. And you don't see that in many other sports.
And I'll tell you what, you're doing it at a really great time of year too, because if I'm remembering right, the way that kind of the calendar goes, a lot of the big, like the bigger races, we got Western States, the UTMB, Hard Rock, you're looking at spring and summer. And so the Mammoth Trail Fest is a great way to almost kind of end your season. I know we still have a couple big, you know, we got like Javelina 100 and there's one or two like in October, November, but I love that you can even approach the Mammoth Trail Fest as like, dude, this is a staycation because the mountains that time of year where you are amazing. And hello, people, the tallest mountain in the lower 48 states is very close by, as is Death Valley. You can genuinely make, I mean, you could even extend your trip and hit up those spaces as well. Like you could have a really cool cap to the end of your season and just go for, if you don't want to race even, it sounds like people can come and just enjoy themselves just because of the surroundings and all the other events you have to offer.
For sure. And that was a big kind of like part of what, like we decided consciously not to have like 100K or 100 mile, you know, and at some point we'll probably add those or maybe there'll be a different time of the year. But like we want it to be like, yeah, you could have done UTMB and you could still come out and just hang out and have a party.
So smart.
Or like it, you know, if you're like, oh, I like this trail running thing. It sounds really cool. I see Sally do it. I want to give it a shot. Like, okay, then come out and do our 3 mile trail run or do our 16 miler, you know, something short and palatable. It's still hard. It's still going to kick your butt, but
yeah, your altitude. Tell us about that.
Oh yeah. So, I mean, we paint this like it's just going to like be a mellow like trail jaunt, but Mammoth Lake sits at 8,000 feet. And our mountain tops out at 11,053 feet. So it is high altitude. All of our races have an average elevation of 9,000 feet. You know, it doesn't mean you can't do it, but it does, you know, you want to properly prepare for it. Otherwise, one, you're not going to enjoy it. And then second, your chance of, you know, really struggling goes up the less. But that's, I mean, that's true for someone that signs up for a half marathon that isn't training, you're going to get your butt kicked.
Totally.
You know, it's just kind of like up here, you're at altitude and like rocky terrain. And, you know, even though I designed the courses specifically to be like what I like to run, flowy, fun, races or like courses that like have some rocks and techie spots, but it's not like overly, you know, technical where you're just like crying and you want it to like want it to smooth out. Like these are designed for flow, you know, where you can appreciate the vistas and it is a beautiful course, but it's still hard. But yeah, like you said, from like Mount Whitney south of us all the way up, you know, through Lee Vining, the, you know, the portal to Yosemite, the Eastern Sierra Corridor, which Mammoth sits in, is one of the most spectacular places in the US. It's it really is a sight to be seen.
Well, I'm super excited about it. And I
know we're going to have to, get you up here.
I know.
Put you on the mic.
You and I will talk after this show. We'll figure something out because thankfully like last year, I was really sad. I missed the event last year. We were finishing up the Choose Strong project, but I have nothing in September, which is rare because it's still like a beautiful time of the year, can actually be super busy. So we're going to make it happen. But I wanted to pivot really quick because I know that Lindsay doesn't really like social media or have attention or any of that. Like Lindsay is Tim's wife. I adore her. I haven't had a ton of conversation with her, but what the conversation I have had with her is I love her honesty. She is who she is. And I know that you guys are best buds. And I just wanted, because my podcast is so driven on being strong, strong love, body and mind. I know that Lindsay has been an incredible support to you over the years. And so I wanted our listeners to have a little fun and just hear how you guys met and how you started dating. We're just going to pivot real quick. You guys are going to get to know Tim a little bit here.
Yeah, you are. You're spot on.
Is she going to be okay with this?
Oh, yeah. I'm the one that has to remind her of her anniversary. So like we have like gender role reversals in our house. Let's
see. People need to know first, you guys. You're not going to find a lot about her if you try to look her up on Instagram. She only has 9 posts, and 2 of those 9 are Tim's birthday.
I know. She
loves her husband.
She's able to stay away. She does very well about like moderating social media usage. Like she's a lurker. So like she does like, you know, hang out in the shadows and watch, but she also only does it for like 5 or 10 minutes a day and then she's done. Like she doesn't allow herself to get sucked back in, which is, I think is such a commendable thing and something I strive for because like many, it can be a blessing and a curse and the relationship with social media is not always healthy. Mm-hmm. And so I really admire her for her ability to like set it and forget it. But yeah, we met in the fall of 2005. So what is that? 18 years ago. And it was a university up at Chico State. She was actually born and raised in Chico. And I was my sophomore year at Chico, and she was a one-year JC transfer to the team. And we met at our cross-country camp up in Tahoe. So we go up there every summer for a week before the semester starts and just to, you know, hang out with your teammates and kind of set the tone for the season and talk about goals and just have a good time. Like you were saying earlier, like it's all about being surrounded by people that you enjoy and cultivating that team atmosphere. And I feel like after college or after high school, for a lot of people, it's hard to find that same atmosphere. Like anyone that has been part of a team sport, like if you are right now in that moment, like, and you have a good team, cherish it, like really enjoy it. Cause it's hard to replicate. Like those are your, what do they call them? Like the glory years or the golden mm-hmm. years.
It's so true.
Yeah, the glory. Yeah. The glory days. And so, yeah, we met at a cross country camp and then that fall, like we kind of hit it off. But true to her nature, she was a hard one to convince that I was she's hard. She's a very independent spirit, and so I had to chase her for quite a while.
Tim, you're skipping over like the best part. Okay, we want to know. What was the thing? Did you see her running one day? Did you hear her laughing? Like, did you try to keep up with her? Was she trying to keep up with you? Like, what was it when you were like, okay, I like her. I like that girl.
So we have different, this is where, you know, the human memory fails us. Like, I swear that I saw her wearing a BYU sweatshirt, and she swears she has never owned a BYU sweatshirt. But
oh my gosh, I hear her. If she wants to come on the podcast, yelling. She is more than welcome.
Oh man, I think that'll be a hard sell. But yeah, so we were. There was something about her that I was immediately drawn to, true to the nature, like, you know, being 18, 19, 20 year old kids, like, we had a truth or dare at the cross country camp. And I told some of my friends of like, you got to dare me to kiss her. And so like, we tried to rig the system. it was just kind of like, yeah.
And did it happen?
It did. Yep. And,
you're smooth, Tim. Smooth. And you won her heart right there, right? It was like the best kiss ever.
Oh, I mean, it was picture perfect. something that we always laugh about is how like our relationship is probably like, you know, it's as real as it comes, in the sense of like our engagement ended or began with like her in tears and ended with her in tears, but not like because she was happy about the engagement. It was like other things going on. And so like, it's kind of like, you know, wedding on or rain on your wedding day or something. It's like, I almost feel like that's a better indication that like you're going to make it, like it, yes. It's not this false, you know, like facade of like, oh, everything's perfect. It's like, no, it's never been perfect, but it's been fun and enjoyable. And we really enjoy each other's company. But, yeah, so we've been together for 18 years, which is crazy. Wow. So it's been a long time. Yep.
That's wonderful. I love hearing that. Yeah. We don't hear that enough. And you're right. It's the real relationships that last. You get to see each other in all their humanness, and you choose to love that person. And it's just really neat. I've loved watching you guys from afar. And you guys are tucked away in the Eastern Sierra. But the times that she's come to races, I still remember, because we were at Ultra Trail Australia together.
Yeah.
And I remember my pack was not big enough, and you were so kind. You had an extra pack. I had to wear your pack in that race. It was like,
I forgot about that.
Yeah. I was so grateful, because nobody has more required gear on the planet than Ultra Trail Australia. Like, I thought
it's like, do you have your flat iron?
I'm not kidding. Like the stuff, like right down to like the reflective jackets you have to have, or the, anyway, so you let me borrow your jacket. But one thing I do remember, because I did get to have a chat with Lindsay, it was like at a pre-dinner or something. But I remember the next morning, she's so focused on, she was training for something. So she's very, very focused on her running. And the next day it was like big, huge expo. Remember how big their expo was? I mean, that's a huge stage. I mean, thousands of people. That race, by the way, if you're listening, absolutely worth going. I mean, we love Aussies. Americans love Aussies. Yeah, yeah. We love their accent, everything about them. We like each other. But the race is so well put on, and it was such a great event. But I do remember walking through the parking lot, and there's just cars everywhere. And I think it started to rain. There was like a little bit of rain going on, and just people crawling all over, all around the expo, getting to their car. They got their bags. They're going in and out of buildings. And Lindsay just flying past me. She's got a little sports bra and shorts on, just hammering a workout. You know, everyone else is like, you know, prepping for like race day. But that is one thing that I've always admired about the both of you guys, for as much as I've followed you and talked to you guys, the dedication to just get the training done. And I think it was you at one point told me that she is so good about her training. It was like 16 miles every day or something like that. But have always admired the hard work that both of you guys do. And I don't know why I just remember that expo day, but I was just like, wow, Tim's about to race, and Lindsay's like, dude, I'm getting my workout in, even if it is in the afternoon in the middle of a parking lot.
Yeah. No, she has incredible work ethic. Nothing will slow her down.
Yeah, pretty incredible. So, well, thank you for sharing that, how you guys met. So cute. And for those, my college kids that are listening to this, you know, Tim let you in on a little secret about, you know, if you have a secret crush – then play Truth or Dare and rig it. And you can get your kiss that way. Super sweet. Well, I want to wrap this up, Tim. Can you share with us some of, outside of the Mammoth Trail Fest, what are you excited about this year? You signed with Craft Sportswear, which is so exciting. I love their stuff. It's so sharp looking. The pictures that you put out of you in it when you said that you signed with them, so good. But tell us a little bit about that transition and what you're looking forward to this year.
Thank you. I'm really excited. It's, I had 6 years with Hoka and we had a great relationship. And I feel like we had a lot of good ups, a lot of bad downs, but, that's kind of the nature of things. And
yes,
and I'm, what you had just touched on, I'm really excited that Craft is leaning into cultivating that team aspect, something that some of the other brands are doing also, where it's like a small intimate crew where they want to really support and bring in this, this small, group of athletes, men and women, and create that team environment, which is something I've really longed for. Like as you were describing our 2014, 15, 16 days. And so I'm really looking forward to that. Just having, like these close teammates that we can lean on and do things together and have training camps. And Craft, they really believe in my vision for the next couple of years as an athlete. They've also they're committed to supporting me as just a person, trying to help me with getting the things that I need to be successful as a human, but also as a top level athlete. And so I'm really, thankful that their vision and their values really align with mine. And in a lot of ways, I feel like I'm having my Meb moment where, back in 2012, Meb, some people wrote him off. They thought maybe his career was over. And, but he went on to make two more Olympic teams, win Boston. And I feel like I'm right at that kind of. I mean, Meb, if anyone, and probably most people that are in the running world have interacted with him, because he's the type of person that just somehow says hi, shakes every hand and kisses every baby at an expo or an event. He's a very special person. And he lived here, long before I did in Mammoth, and getting to know him, he really is equally as special as, as an individual on a one-on-one basis. But, I've taken a lot of inspiration from him, and he, when he was here, he was a really good mentor. But I feel like, I look at what he did with his career, and I really feel like I'm at that inflection point of my career where my best days are ahead. And I'm really thankful that Craft believes in me, and they are willing to continue to support me for that. And so over the next couple of years, looking at, kind of doing things a little unconventional. I've never fully gone all in on running, and I guess I'm getting as close to that as possible, where I've stepped back from my full-time physical therapy job. I'm per diem, but I'm basically not working anymore in the clinic, and that's allowing me time to focus on Trail Fest and then also my own personal growth as an athlete. So I'm really excited to see, take a stab at that, where I've never dedicated that much time to my mental and physical well-being as an athlete. And I think that was probably one of the missing puzzle pieces over the years, of just being stretched too thin, trying to do everything and, being a jack of all trades, but a master of none. And so I am looking forward to being able to give the Trail Fest and my own personal running the care and the attention that it deserves. And, and that doesn't mean that I'm measuring the success based on winning every race, but it's that I want to feel that I left no stone unturned as I enter, this kind of last chapter or the last chapters of my athletic career. And so I'm excited. And as anyone that has followed my journey, it wouldn't be a surprise to know that I'm still chasing this this dragon that hangs around the Mont Blanc massif, and there's some goals that I still have out there in Chamonix that I'd like to try and take another crack at. And all we can do is keep showing up, and I feel like I'm in a position and I have the tools and the mindset to achieve what I have set out for, but I'm going to be okay with wherever, it falls. Just knowing that if I can know that I walked away giving it all that I had, then I'll be proud of it. And for a lot of years, I wasn't able to say that just because I was, you know, struggling too much internally.
I love that you are pushing forward and that you, what you said, my best days are ahead of me. That is such a powerful mindset to have. And I'll tell you what, some of the most inspiring athletes that I look up to have stories of overcoming, or maybe where they didn't start off is like the best one. But the common thread among all those athletes and just influencers is that they just kept going. They kept trying. They just didn't give up. One of my favorites is Walt Disney. He went bankrupt 5 times before he built his happiest place on earth. I mean, if you look at what it's become, it has definitely affected us worldwide for decades. but I love that story just because that's someone who failed over and over and over again in a really intense way. I mean, if my husband told me, hey, we went bankrupt for the 3rd time and he's trying to build some amusement park, I'd be like, hey, give it a rest, buddy. Like, it's not working out.
It's done.
we are done. You know, Kobe Bryant, I love basketball. I love the work ethic of a lot of my favorite basketball players. But Kobe Bryant was another great example. He went, when he was 12 years old, he went to a basketball camp and he did not make a single shot. And that's actually what spurred him to get better. And he worked really, really hard. I mean, as we know, his work ethic was incredible. Michael Jordan made JV in high school. I mean, went on to be one of the greatest basketball players in history. And I love this idea of, no, you just keep pushing, you keep trying. You know, what you did yesterday does not define your days ahead. What defines you are the choices that you make today and how you choose to rise up from wherever you came from and how you use that either as a way to add a little bit of fuel to the flame or, you know, maybe just staple yourself in fear and not keep moving forward. And I think, Tim, that you are an incredible example of someone who is not afraid to try and is not afraid to keep hope in your heart, to keep reaching and keep wondering, keep that curiosity alive. And I'll tell you that you've always been an inspiration to me. And I just thank you so much for the strength and the courage that you have to share your story and your life and just the way that you forge forward in all that you do. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. No, it's the feelings are very, very mutual on that front. And I think what you described with all those examples, like the traits of like grit and resiliency and just patience out of all those individuals and yourself, it's like, you know, those are the ingredients into something very tasty. And I think it's just, you know, you got to be patient. Nothing good comes overnight. It's a process.
So true.
And
so
we want it now in this digital age where we can get almost everything now and overnight delivery, or I guess people still use Amazon, but it's kind of like, yeah, all the best things are going to take some time. And wherever you are, you know, that high school kid or college student or person in a career that you're just not fulfilled, it's like, you just got to give it time, like keep sampling things. And it's a process. Like, keep taking that next step.
Absolutely. Have you released your race schedule yet?
I have.
Are you still
not.
kind of working through what you want to do?
Yeah, I'm working through it. I would say I will be in Chamonix at the end of August, and I'm trying to figure out everything before that.
Yeah.
So something I've really enjoyed over the last 2 years is racing local. Like you said, American River 50 or Way Too Cool or some of these awesome California races, maybe, you know, who's in El Moro. But it's just fun because then it's a way to connect with the people that really matter. You know, my family can really show up and be there, and a lot of old friends and just people I've known in the running community for almost, 25 years. It's really fun to be able to share it with them. So.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, I hope to see you locally, and I hope to see you at the Mammoth Trail Fest this year. Like I said, we'll have a chat and figure something out. For all of our listeners, if you are looking for a way to break into trail running, I highly recommend doing it at the Mammoth Trail Fest. If you're looking for a new challenge or just a vacation away with your friends, I mean, this is a great weekend to get away with friends, with family, and just enjoy your time with an incredible community in one of my favorite places in the world. I cannot talk this up enough. I'm so biased, but it truly is.
Keep talking up. Keep talking
yeah.
up.
Yeah. It truly is magical. So make sure you check that out. Also, Tim, where can people follow you the best as far as social media goes? Is it Instagram?
Yeah, it's Instagram. That's pretty much the only place I post. I think there are like those automatic posts that go to Twitter. I've tried to stay off that platform as much as possible.
Yeah, same. Have you created?
And Strava. I'd say Strava.
Yes,
the most
yes.
Active.
You are on Strava, right. Which you are a fun follow.
I don't know. Maybe you feel like generally or yeah. I feel like that's one of the most positive platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Like it. Maybe it's just my experience, but like I mean, I get torn down and things thrown at me on every other platform, but like Strava. Right. That's very rare. Like, I feel like it's That's genuinely so like people are like, it's literally giving you a kudo. And I don't know, like you don't see shade tossed as much over there, which I really appreciate.
That's so true. That's so true. Yeah. I try to stay out of feeds where there's just, yeah, the arguing and the putting down. I've never understood that. I've always asked the question, wow, if this person was face to face with me, would they say the same thing? Or if face to face with that person, would they say the same thing?
No.
No.
Absolutely not. None of us are that courageous or bold or like
right?
A jerk. Yeah.
No, Strava is, I love Strava. I don't post as much as I used to. I've had a couple unfortunate encounters. And so even regardless of the heat lamp, I don't post as much. Like sometimes I'll put like some of my strength stuff on there. And sometimes I'll just do like random manual posts just to say hi. But I get on there all the time and I give out kudos and I love that community. And sometimes I just love reading people's titles, like what they title their stuff or the pictures they post on their run. It's so motivating. I'm like, oh, rad. They got out for some skiing or this person cycled 80 miles today. Really? Like it's so fun. So follow Tim on Strava. He is a fun follow. And of course his routes are amazing. I think you did like a 6 mile ski but you had like 5,000 feet of climbing today. Was that what you did? I saw something recent from
yesterday.
You.
It was yesterday. It was probably like, maybe 7,000 or so. I mean, from our house, like we have a 13,000 foot peak looking over the top of our house and our house sits at 6,900. So, there's quite a bit of relief right out the back door, which is cool.
Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah, it's super fun to follow you. So we will give Tim a follow either on Strava or Instagram, and then make sure that you check out his Mammoth Trail Fest. Tim, I cannot thank you enough for your time today. I know you have so much on your plate right now, but man, your words have been so encouraging. I know our listeners just feel so much stronger because they had this time with you and getting to know you. For those of you listening, if you have a chance to send Tim a word of encouragement, of kindness or strength or anything, please do. I encourage that with all my guests. I love creating community here in the Choose Strong podcast community. We have an amazing group of people that listen. And I'm so stoked, Tim, that you are our guest today. And just keep being you. Keep shining your light because you're doing a lot of good. And I know that's just only going to continue. So thank you.
Thank you so much. And thank you for everything you're doing. It's very inspiring and it is not easy to create something. So like, keep going. Like I know it's hard, but you're doing awesome. So thank you for everything.
I appreciate that. And to all of our listeners, thanks again for joining us wherever you are. Keep choosing strong.